So this is the third day of this four-day retreat here in Tampa on the 7-point mind trainings of Geshe Chakawa. Just a few notes, let me see. So there's some questions about some things we talked about yesterday, but I think we'll cover them all today. There is a question about the four kayas, which is something we are not covering today, but I think that's in reference to probably a slogan, which reads, "To see confusion as the four kayas, a protection of emptiness, is unsurpassable." So I'm not going to go into that, but basically the four kayas, which is the question, the four kayas are the four bodies. Kayas are bodies. And traditionally, it is said in Buddhist teaching that there are three and sometimes four bodies the Buddha has, Buddha bodies, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nimanakaya, and Svabhagakaya. These are... Anyhow, without going into it, these are the bodies of a Buddha. The empty body, the Dharma body, the Shunyata body, the radiant light body, the physical manifestation of a Buddha, enlightened. Right? So we would say, here are the four bodies of a Buddha. You know, how do you see a confusion? You see, that's the paradox of this statement. Right? Because it's sort of like, heaven and hell are the same. It's sort of like, what? You know, the four bodies of the Buddha and a confused mind state are the same? Yes. Because the second verse is to see the four kayas as confusion, emptiness is the ultimate protection. Why? Because no matter, anybody ever been confused? I mean, what does confusion actually mean? Think about it. When you say you're confused, what's really going on?
Don't understand what's being said.
Yeah, you don't understand. So you don't understand what's being said. You're confused. Now, I don't know what to do. Right? So many people are very kind of neurotic. They're always having like arguments within themselves. Should I do this or should I do that? Is this or that? You know, the archetype of that, of course, is Hamlet, right? And we know what happened to him. Again, you know, it's just this endless weighing back and forth. Should I? Shouldn't I? Does it mean this? Does it mean that? It doesn't mean a kind of immediate kind of not understanding and working it through to understanding. It means that neurotic kind of confusion that just dominates the mind and creates a kind of a dullness, right? Or a confusedness. It's just, right? Now, when you look directly at that thing that which you're calling my confusion, which is a minute ago is so disturbing to you, right? So debilitating to you. You see what? Nothing. There's no such thing as confusion. In that moment, you see the empty nature, even as something as negative as confusion, there's nothing there. It is just thoughts. Right? One thought talking to another thought. Right? You know, when the confusion dissipates, you will see much more clearly what is in front of you. But in the state of confusion, which is really just a mental affliction, you can't see the way because all you see is your own thoughts. Right? We are endlessly confused because we can't figure something out. Right? As if somehow this is always going to give us the answer. But this is often what's causing the problem. That's why we're confused. Because we're just lost in our thought. Should I do this? What about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? What does this mean? What does that mean? What if this happens? What if that happens? Right? Oh, I forgot about that one. Oh, boy. You know. Meanwhile, not only are you internally in a kind of glacier, in an afflictive mind state, what is really happening in life is passing you by. You don't even see what's going on in life. You're just lost in our quote-unquote confusion. What is the best protection against confusion? Not more thinking. Seeing the empty nature of your thoughts and the empty nature of what you're grasping at or worried about. You know, what's the worst thing could happen? You missed a train. Well, you know, it's not the last train, is it? Right? It doesn't mean you just go through life, but it means, it's like somebody said to me yesterday, they already find thoughts about driving home and concerned about traffic already in their minds. Like somehow, this is what our life has been reduced to. Right? I mean, you know, what is traffic? I mean, you know, you're in your car. You're still aware, you're still present. You know, if you're bored, you can always turn on the radio, some music, you know. You might get to your destination a little late. Would one rather not? Of course. What? But have you ever gotten to your destination late? You know, has the world come to an end? Right? It's very interesting growing up in the West where everything is so precise. And then you go to a different culture where it's like, oh, I'll see you tomorrow at 1. Well, 1 o'clock comes, nobody's there. 1:30 comes, and then around 2:30 they meander in. It's like, they don't even apologize. It's a whole different mindset. Right? You know, it's more like, I'll see you tomorrow afternoon. When they say 1 o'clock, they sort of say, kind of generally, that's when I'll see you. I mean, I was a bit amazed that people would, we make plans weeks and weeks, months in advance. I mean, for them, it'd be like, oh, let's go here tomorrow. You know, it'd be like to Delhi. It'd be like someplace we'd planned for weeks, and they just go, oh, let's go see so-and-so. You know? Oh, let's just go see him. Anyhow, let's not get... So the four kayas, confusion... Confusion's in our minds. The road is clear. Follow the instructions. Right? Take the medicine as prescribed. That's simple. Right? Follow the doctor's orders. That's all. No confusion. Confusion's when we get lost in our own head, our own thoughts, our own take on things, which we value so highly. You know. Anyhow, don't get me going. So, yesterday, and last night we looked at not all of them, but several of the slogans related to what is called ultimate bodhicitta, that aspect of the enlightened mind, of the awakened mind, that is unconditioned. And perhaps last night in our practice of several of the slogans, everyone got a little taste, or some people got a little taste, or enough of a taste, of this pure, undifferentiated mind of pure, pristine awareness. But let me just say, it is not that simple. And it is something that needs to be penetrated deeply, because it's easily to misconstrue what one is experiencing. Many people think that when their mind is quiet and calm and at rest, oh, this must be my pristine awareness. And that is not the case. All we're experiencing at that point is the this mind, we might say this thinking mind, this conceiving mind. Sometimes it is active, and sometimes it is at rest. But it's still that same thinking mind. So really all we're experiencing is just the thinking mind at rest, which is good. That is a quiet mind. That is quietism, right? But that is not it. Okay. That is why the instruction last night was to examine the nature of awareness. We have to examine. So if you say to yourself, my mind, or there's an awareness, my mind is still. My mind's at rest. Right? You know you're not there, because there's still somebody, something that's aware of that, right? And so the second instruction is to break through that, to break out of that cocoon of quietism, which just feels very good, especially if people have had a very active, busy mind their whole life. They go, wow, I'll settle for this, right? And many people do. But to understand, this is not what's being talked about here. That's just the first step. That is the result of a samatha, a quiet, calm mind. But it is not the purpose of this path. This path is about awakening. And to be awakened means to understand deeply the nature of reality. The nature of reality is understood in the mind. Right? So we have to examine this awareness, this thing that says, you know, my mind is at rest, or my mind is agitated, right? I have a busy mind. I have a peaceful mind. I have a wonderful mind. I have a terrible mind. You see, there's something that's saying all that. This is, so you know, as long as there's something saying that, you're still in the world of duality, separation. Right, there's the phenomena of the mind, and then there's something that's observing it. Right? Now again, we know developmentally to get, you know, developing the observer is a good step. Right? But that is not the end. That's really sort of the beginning. Then this observer, this mind, this self, has to be probed, examined, assessed, so it is clearly penetrated. Right. So we can break out of the shell of conceptualization and enter the world of pure awareness. In the realm of pure awareness, there is no self and other. There is nothing standing outside the experience going, nice experience. That is why it is said, even the remedy has to be let go of. Right, so if you get to the point where you're going, I've come to the realization, the mind is empty, there's nothing here. Well, what said that? What knows that? What What is that? You see, that has to be known. It's about knowing. Right? So it is a process. It is a process that unfolds through meditative practice. Is that clear? One can have insights, one can have tastes of it, but one wants to really go right down to the source, the root. As somebody said last night, before it all began, come on, was your original face before your parents were born? Before the whole structure of self and other, duality, thoughts, the whole world of concepts and ideas, what was there? What is there? Right? And this can be, this knowing is accessible to everyone, because the answer is found in your own mind. Where is your own mind? It's right here. It's nowhere else. So, it is a process. For those of you who have interest in probing deeper, doing the meditations, coming to longer retreats, going on solitary retreat, you know what I mean, beginning to practice this in your own home, finding texts that guide you along, working with a teacher is the way it is done. So, I'm skipping Rest in Nature of All, the Base of Everything, and Post-Meditation Practice, Be a Child of Illusion. I've commented on that in the past. But let me just say, after meditation, do not allow the experience of resting evenly to dissipate, no matter what form of activity you engage in. Somebody asked about that last night. You want to learn when you enter the world of activity, when you enter the world of phenomena. It is no different than when you are on your meditative cushion, right? And your mind is just aware. Sounds, sights, smells, sensations arise, thoughts, feelings, perceptions arise, and you're simply what? Aware, present. Mindful, undisturbed, not grasping on, not pushing away, not fabricating stories, and Dzogchen is called not chaining. Right? First thought, second thought, third thought, fifth thought, 12th thought, 100th thought. Right? The mind is very free. That's called a free mind, a mind that is liberated. It's no longer enslaved to whatever is arising. Right? We are enslaved because it arises, we attach. We push it away. We comment on everything. Okay. So don't allow that experience of resting evenly, no matter what form of activity you engage in. Continually foster the feeling of knowing that all appearances, yourself, others, animate, inanimate, even though they seem to be nothing, appear, though they seem to be nothing. So everything's just appearing and then disappearing. Everything's appearing. Disappearing, right? Every thought, feeling, perception you've had just arose and disappeared, didn't it? Every drama you had, everything you got upset about, everything you got angry, hurt, resentful, right? Scared. Where is it all? Gone. You know, gone. You didn't have to react that way, did you, looking back? A million ways we react. We don't have to. Let the mind rest at ease. Keep that pipe of pure water flowing. I think it was Master Bankei, the great Japanese Zen master, said, you know, people take this beautiful original mind and they turn it into, you know, demons, hell beings, pretas, animals, right? You know, we take this precious, pure awareness, this pristine, luminous awareness, with its innate way of knowing things, and we just turn it into, all the animalistic urges and ways of being, into aggression, into anger, into harming, into fear, into despair and greed. I mean, can you see what we do with it? Everything you experience, all your feelings are arising in your mind. They are the substance of mind. They have no identity. Why do it? We do it, why? Because we're ignorant. We're ignorant. We think we're a separate self, and everybody out there is separate selves, permanent individuals. When you look into yourself, what do you see? Nothing. There's nothing there. Thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, they're all just arising and passing. There's nothing there. In me or in you. And yet we look at each other as if they're all solid, and we have ideas about who they are and who they're not, and right? It's like it's like being in a comic strip. Everybody's one-dimensional in our mind. They're good, they're bad. Right? And they could be good and bad within an hour. Right? We love them, we hate them. Right? Just like that. That's a one-dimensional mind. That's a mind that's ignorant. It doesn't understand. There's nothing there. They are simply a product of causes and conditions. That's all they are. And that's all we are. That's called wisdom. That's called understanding. We are ignorant, and we act in this world as if they're solid. That's the world of duality. And from that, we attach and we avert. We cling to, we push away. And you end up with what's called samsara, this world. You want to know why the world is the way it is? It's because of the minds of human beings. Seems to be coming on strong this morning. Doesn't even drink coffee. I don't know. Must be strong tea this morning. Now, there is the ground. Remember yesterday we talked, another name for this alaya is the ground of being, the ground of awareness, right? Yesterday I used the analogy of the of Earth, but an Earth that's just Earth. It's all Earth. There's no plants at all. It's just Earth, right? And Earth has the potential to grow things, right? Our awareness, this mind, has the capability of generating all types of thoughts, emotions, feel, right? It has that potential. And it does not discriminate, just like the earth does not discriminate, right? But what's happened is, of course, plants have grown on the earth, right? All kinds of plants. Beautiful plants and ugly plants. Plants that are nurturing and nutritious, plants that are poisonous, right? So relative bodhicitta is about plants, right? It's about what has grown and what do we want to grow on this earth. Right? What is it that we have seeded in our consciousness, in our awareness, which has flowered as thoughts, feelings, perceptions, speech, the way we speak, our actions, the way we relate? That is all coming from our mind and the seeds that have been planted there. Most of which has been planted by who? Not us. Okay? Very few of us are really original beings. Most of us, we have just, you know, environment, family, conditioning, society, genes, you know, all kinds of stuff. Right? We just took it in. No decent filter. And so we end up like we are. Thinking that this is us, because we identify with our thoughts. We identify with our feelings as if they are us. Okay. So, relative bodhicitta is about this world where things relate to things. And obviously, as a human being, the key question is for us is, as human beings, is how do we relate to one another? Right? How do we relate to one another? Absolute bodhicitta is about how do I relate to my mind? Right? How do I relate to my mind? Understand my mind? Right? Relative bodhicitta is now about how does this mind relate to all these other beings, including the animals, including the, you know, and now we know including the planet, because we know the planet is a living thing. How do we relate to all that? That's relative bodhicitta. This is the relative world. Okay? In the same way, to take my analogy from yesterday with the pipe, right? It's like it's pure water, fresh from the mountains, cold and pristine. Now what? Over here, it's still fresh. Over there, you know, there. Hillsborough River. Can you just dip your, you know, why don't we just get down there and dip our thermoses in there and bring it back and just drink it? We can't, can we? Like that, the relative world. We take things that are pristine, right? And through actions, unskillful actions, ignorant actions, conscious actions, unconscious actions, we pollute, right? We create toxicity. In the same way, this pure, pristine mind of ours, we take and we do the same thing. We pollute it. So, we need to change, don't we? We need to change our mind. Relative bodhicitta. Preparation. So let's first do the preparation, preliminary practice of Guru Yoga. Then you should meditate on love and compassion. Understanding, love, and compassion. That's all you need. And a good discriminating intelligence. But that comes naturally if you see clearly. It doesn't come through book learning.